When Eric Hurtado, so Eric Hurtado, and then Eric Hurtado, it's That's So MLS. See, I told you it wasn't that good.
No, it's good. It's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello. How are you?
Nick, and Nick is on a real, as you, if you had not noticed, a real Eric Hurtado high.
Eric Hurtado is on a real Eric Hurtado high. It's got nothing to do with me.
Have you taken up residence on Hurtado Island?
I'm thinking of moving there.
Are you vacationing there?
Oh my goodness.
They're going to need to expand.
Yeah, what an exciting week for, for Whitecaps fans anyway. Some interesting results around the league, but I don't know. I would argue, and only with a little bit of bias here, for me, the most interesting and exciting result of the week was, in fact, Vancouver beating Portland, the unbeaten Portland in 15 games at home, get knocked down by the Whitecaps by none other than Eric Hurtado himself.
Well, that's what's funny, isn't it? You can't beat anyone. You can't beat DC, or not anyone, but it feels sometimes like you can't beat anyone. You get 2-2 draws everywhere. You lose to DC. Like, and then, oh, well, where are you going to get your wins if you can't ever win? Oh, just the team that's gone 15 straight without losing.
Yeah, can't beat Colorado at home, but you can beat Portland away. Like, just, but that's kind of, you know, I feel like that has been the Whitecaps for the past couple of seasons, is we do step up against the better teams. It's the ones that we just need to put to bed that just seem to be the ones that we make the hardest for ourselves.
I do think that you can really owe you can credit the Whitecaps. It's not as though Portland beat themselves, but I think that a lot of people, especially in the first half, noted the lack of sort of focus. And I feel like it's just a testament to how hard it is to go that long without being an unbeaten, is that just some games you come out and your head's not in it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is how much of an Eric Hurtado high I'm on. Now I really feel like we should slot in a different one, because it was Christian Teixeira who got the second goal, not Eric Hurtado.
Eric Hurtado was there. Eric Hurtado,
he did play.
It looked for half a second like Eric Hurtado was going to go in goal. Because it's still a good Eric Hurtado moment. The Canadian Championship is on Wednesday. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But there was the moment. Stefan Marinovic. I don't know if this turned into a thing, but he looked like he was having knee issues. That we're going to take him out after the Whitecaps had already used a substitution. And so the commentators were like grousing online, like, or grousing on commentary. Who's going to be the next guy? Maybe Breck Shea Kai Kamara looked like he was okay. And then Kai Kamara's on the bench.
Yeah.
And then the camera cuts to Eric Hurtado looking to Carl Robinson. And I was like, oh my God, are we kidding?
Yeah, I think it was just a bit of a knock. I did see that Marinovic traveled to Toronto for the final, so it must have cleared up. But yeah, a little dicey there at the end. What did you take away from this match?
So I thought it was really great. They really laid it on early, and they took advantage of the fact that Portland lacked confidence. I do feel like they kind of let off a little bit in the second half. I mean, they just kind of soaked up pressure and thankfully sort of didn't come back to bite them. Like, especially late on, they mm-hmm. were very much playing the corners, you know, like doing whatever they could to sort of keep them. I don't know with the amount of stoppage times goals that you can really think like that, but it worked, so I can't really fault them.
Well, for me, it was a little bit more positive to see. I know Portland fans found it incredibly frustrating, but the Whitecaps did what every other team in MLS does. that we've been lacking is just seeing out a game. And, you know, I think Felipe went down with some sort of mystery fake injury and then sprung to his feet and was fine. And it sucks. It's a bit of gamesmanship. But at the same time, other teams do it to us all the time. And when you've got lead, an important away lead, you do just have to run it into the corner, you know, just clear it down the pitch as far as you can. And, you know, occasionally suffer from a strange cramp that just suddenly appears and follow the pitch. Like, it's not a great part of the game, but it is part of the game.
I love Christian Chichera, but but there was definitely a moment where he's looking. Do we have the call? Yeah. Oh, fuck, I got a cramp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's blowing the whistle. Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, my toe. It's very sore right now.
But sore.
It was such a treat to just finally see the Whitecaps. Well, not finally see, because we did see them do it in New York, but I was really worried after the Canadian Championship final leg one game, where we capitulated and gave up a goal in literally the last play of the game, an own goal, no less, that was really going to affect the mentality of the team. But that didn't seem to be the case. And to bounce back and get a huge result like this... of course, the adage is always every game is must-win game, but for the Whitecaps, this really was. They really can't afford to be dropping points anymore at this point in the season with it being so, so tight. And as we saw with some of their rivals who are nipping at their heels, some of them got results on the weekend as well. So this was really, really critical for the Whitecaps to get... to stay in the mix, because if they lost this one or only got a point out of it, it really did start to look like, you know, the teams below them are in form and it would be very, very hard to get that sixth and final playoff spot.
That makes sense, especially against Portland, where because Portland has had this great run of form. I'm looking at the standings to see if this is true. No, they still may find themselves in contention with Portland, depending on if there's ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
The three points may not necessarily help them against Portland, but when you think of all the other teams that didn't take points off of Portland, that's where the comparison really is. It makes it the most important.
Mm-hmm.
Which you kind of only get in a scenario where, you know, where you have a team that's gone so long without taking a true loss. What else did I have? I think that was what made me the worry about the late goal. What made me concerned that it was going to all happen again. But I think to a certain degree, when you have that kind of error, it sticks in your mind. So it's like there's one kind of error that's the error of, like, am I going to fail at this?
Yeah.
Once I try to do it. And then there's the kind of error that's like, I forgot this. And that kind of does stick in your mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like shutting off in the later minutes of a game is the latter kind that you could kind of mentally prepare for.
Mm-hmm.
That is maybe helped by having it happen to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen the Whitecaps take advantage of that before and use those painful lessons to help spur them on. It didn't work in the final leg against Toronto, but it did work in the following game to just go, okay, so, like, you don't forget about it. As you said, you use it to help bolster you and go, right, we know we can switch off at the end of games, so let's do everything we can to make sure we're not putting ourselves in a position where somebody might switch off. Let's keep absorb some pressure. But that last 5 minutes, they were doing everything they could to play the ball up the pitch, knowing full well that maybe they don't want to test their center backs that late in the game.
There are some concerns. I'm going to do it's not a compliment sandwich, because I have one compliment. I have good news, bad news. One good news is that the Teixeira goal was set up by a really, really pretty ball from Breck Shea.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is that Breck Shea, I think, had a pretty bad game except for that.
I agree. What else can you say about Breck Shea other than inconsistency? I think earlier episodes, I've misquoted his salary as 300 or something thousand. It's actually 605,000. So
that's a lot.
That's a lot of money for a bench warmer. You know, on Wednesday, same thing, very tasty cross into the box, and same again this time. But in terms of value for money, I would just be so amazed and quite frankly a little perplexed and agitated if he sticks around in the off season. I think at this point we need the depth on our squad, and you know, Alfonso's not going to play every single game, so it's good to have somebody as a backup, but he really doesn't bring a lot. And you know, the mentality, I know it's difficult when you're on the bench so much, but there's not a lot of positive play coming out of him. He doesn't really seem to be coming on as a sub with much energy.
Yeah, there was a time earlier in the season where it seemed like he, you know, he possesses the necessary skill and experience and talent to make an impact as a sub, but there's something that sort of seems lacking when he's on the ball or when he is in the position to receive.
Agreed.
The other points that I had to make were you mentioned center backs and the first half penalty that Diego Valeri missed, where the Whitecaps weren't punished on this, was a really late tackle from Kendall Waston.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't know. I feel like the rest of the game, I didn't see in highlights too much, like, you know, bad for him, but that looked pretty clumsy.
It was pretty clumsy. Also, that second penalty call that they got, I think there was a lot of talk about just the ref doing pretty much all he could to hand this game back to Portland. That second penalty was just such a terrible, terrible call. You know, and they got the goal, but that's where I felt okay about us wasting time at the end of the match, because they really didn't deserve that second look at goal.
No.
And numerous calls that it just seems that you can bundle over Whitecaps players with abandon and not get a call. But the softest of touch to any of the MLS's stars means that you're either going in the book or certainly the call is going the other team's way, which is unfortunate.
We've talked a little bit about penalty calls where it's like, if not soft, then it's like, well, it wasn't a lot of contact, but it was still enough contact and a type of contact that you just can't allow in the penalty area, you know, and because we're not immune. We look at it and we say, well, like, we understand there's a certain amount of push and pull that goes on, but there's some things, you know, dive or not, or soft going down or not, that you just can't do in the penalty area. And I don't think that the push from Sean Franklin is what you would think of when you think of that. I think that it's the sort of thing that is done. He's got his hand on the shoulder, and that happens constantly.
And there's always pushing in the box as well. Like, and that's the thing of, like, what's the allowable amount? And of course, it's difficult to say, well, here's where the line is, and here's what's too hard of a shove, and here's what's okay. But I don't know. I mean, I really, of course, the incensed fan in me at first immediately goes, there's no way that's a penalty. And then seeing the numerous replays of it, I'm just like, okay, now that is incredibly soft. I mean, if that's a penalty, then every single game in MLS should have at least three penalties, if that's the level of contact that's going to result in one.
There was the suggestion, I think, in the live broadcast that was, and I could be wrong, the third consecutive home game with two penalties for the Timbers?
Yes. Yeah, it was something like that, yeah, which is also highly suspect. And you expect referees to do a little better and, you know, be mindful of not just throwing it to the home team.
We talk about this a lot for Atlanta, but maybe we have stopped paying it. Maybe we're not paying enough attention to Providence Park.
Mm-hmm. Elsewhere around the league, some interesting results, some other kind of meh results. Philadelphia's had a heck of a week, and despite wobbling a little bit, still bested the ever-crumbling New England and smashes in another three goals. Did you get a chance to see this game?
I did not see the highlights for this one. What is happening with New England? Farrell and Zahibo are not the people that we've looked at. They're the goal scorers in that 3-2 game. that we think of as really the stars on that,
yeah,
that side offensively.
While I give you a little summary, look up the first and second Jack Elliott goal if you just scroll down on the highlights there, especially the second. And Jack Elliott, who's a center back for Philadelphia, steps up and just it's the first one, in the 14th minute, just this really cheeky little back heel. And I didn't think that I'd be picking a center back as my goal of the week. Also didn't think we'd get here so quickly, but it's just such a brilliant little finish, which you'd fully expect some of the forwards from Philadelphia to be making, sort of more CJ Sapong stuff, but it's coming from a center back.
It happened so... Wow, wait, one second. I had to, like, rewind this three times.
Yeah, no, it's the camera almost... None of the cameras really catch it, clearly.
Well, I mean, like, there are a bunch of examples this week of, you know, and we've said it before, but you can catch MLS defenses totally unawares just by, like, sending the ball into the box.
Yeah, which is a little odd. You think that... defenders would be ready for a ball coming into the box, but
wow! Oh wow! Wow! That is really great,
right? And it's just, yeah. It's just such a cheeky little goal. But he's just so aware and so ready to do it. Part of me at first was like, maybe it's a deflection. Maybe it just looks good. But no, when you do look at it, especially slow down, he means every bit of that. Mm-hmm. So great job to him, and this is the thing, yeah, that's helping Philadelphia in their sort of late season blossoming here, is that, and conversely, I think the thing that's negatively impacting New England is that Philadelphia is playing as a team, and everybody around the pitch is stepping up to really cement them staying above that playoff line.
Yeah,
and with New England, it's not so much that they've been bad; it's just that, again, they don't look fully switched on, and there's so many plays here where there's just acres of space on the wing, people not marking properly in the box, and once again, it's just come back and bit New England. We know that they can score goals, but, you know, and they have been scoring goals, but it's almost been, they've been like the Whitecaps have been at points, where they're able to knock in a couple, but they're just so easy to score against that it cancels it out. And a New England that, you know, 6 or 7 weeks ago we were talking about is really turning into a strong mid-season form, you know, really needs to find that again, and fast.
After a really disappointing 2017, it looked like this 2018 could be sort of the year that New England turned and became a contender. But if they continue on this pace, it looks like they may need another year or two.
The big thing for me, too, is that they don't have a proper starting goalkeeper, and that has really hurt them as well.
Yeah, Turner. They got Knighton. I like Knighton.
I also like former Brad Whitecap Knighton, but he's seen so little action, and ultimately, unfortunately, yeah, when he has played, he's not looked particularly good.
You think that Brad Friedel would know a good goalkeeper that he called?
You would think that, wouldn't you?
Maybe goalkeepers don't talk to other goalkeepers.
maybe that's part of the problem. And elsewhere's goalkeeper problems or not, certainly defensive problems. New York Red Bulls got their revenge on Chicago for a 1-0 victory. I actually thought there'd be a lot more in this one than there was. So I thought Chicago played much better than they've played recently. But it was just not enough to stop the BWP machine. Any takeaways from this game for you?
Well, it's good news for New York. You want to see the continuing of their form, and you know, the Red Bulls having their revenge is very good. It's also it's nice to see Chicago competing so closely.
Yes, and and this, I hope that this helps their form as they try to get something out of it. It's interesting that since signing Alexander Katai off his loan and transferring him fully, he's really just sort of dried up and not contributed much. So isn't that the it's like, what's the equivalent of the commentator's curse? It's like the signing curse. You sign your star loanee, And then they sort of fall off the face of the earth. But I don't imagine that's going to last too long. I expect Chicago to get some more results as the season wraps up.
I don't know that you see a lot of, you know, I haven't, you know, sort of identified a lot of instances when you get that sort of contract year feeling that you can see in other sports where it's a little more clearly defined.
Yeah.
But, you know, that the combination of that and the window going by could have a real impact. I'm looking at the shot. He got in. He played 30 minutes. He got a shot. So there's that.
It's an expensive shot. But he's a great player. Make no mistake. I think his form will return somewhat. And it's a little unfair that he just hasn't been as blistering as of late. So now we're criticizing.
Well, I don't know. Is it a Schweinsteiger thing, maybe? He's listed as a defender here. So did he start as... No, he started as a center back. But, like, the thing is that we're not talking about, you know, you have another game where in the fire played in midweek, but you have another game where Nikolic and Katai don't start. Alan Gordon was the sole starter last week in MLS when that was the case, and he didn't start this time either. So I think that it's like we seem to have this weird thing, and I don't know if it's a Schweinsteiger thing or what the missing component is, where it's like all of them are turning off at the same time and turning on at the same time.
Yeah. It's tricky.
I was very, and we were talking about sort of I often kind of take Minnesota and Philadelphia in the same, I feel like they have kind of similar stories sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And while Minnesota did not win, they went away to LA to get a big 2-2 result. And I thought that this was a very interesting one. Is Minnesota kind of turns their tide and becomes a team that you've got to pay attention to. But even aside from Minnesota, that first Roman Alessandrini goal.
Yeah.
We're now in the sort of the latter half of the season, and I just have in my notes, fuck Alessandrini. Like, he gets picked out by Ibrahimovic and he hits this really, really nice ball that is, it like, it's not even a hard ball or a big, like, you know, a big golazo strike, but it just sort of confounds defense and the keeper, who I think it makes the keeper jump a little late.
Yeah, it looks like perhaps, and there's not a good angle of it, but it sort of looks like the defense is effectively acting as a bit of a screen. And we've seen Alessandrini take these kinds of shots before, not usually as far out as this, but he kind of just scuffs it across the surface, which is, if you don't see it coming, is potentially a really difficult ball to deal with, because he really does get it right in that bottom right corner. And so if the keeper's moving even a second late or a split second late, then it's going to go in, as it did.
Now, I was talking about this second half of the season thing. LA Galaxy isn't the right team for this year, and the MLS is not the right league on the team that Alessandrini's playing on for them to make this choice. But would you consider Alessandrini an MVP candidate? So many good goals.
But the thing I'm thinking, it's just it's really the dip in form that he just took so long to get going.
Okay.
That don't get me wrong, I absolutely think he's had some incredible plays, some incredible goals this season. But I think the inconsistency is the thing that would make me go, yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be in the running, but I don't know that I'd even put him in my top five.
Mm-hmm.
The story for me here too is just that both teams kind of canceled each other out with their same sort of errors, is just not really putting pressure on the person running into the box. And Romeo Ibarra, who gets the tying goal in the 84th minute, He's screaming in down the left wing, completely unchallenged, and just nobody's there marking him at all. They just make it a little bit too easy for him.
That's Ibarra number two. I think that's his. Is that his first goal for Minnesota? I feel like that could be the case.
There's two Ibarras?
Yep.
How did I miss that?
On Minnesota, they did not both start. Miguel Ibarra started, and Romario was on the bench.
Are they brothers?
No, I don't. Romario is from Ecuador, and Ibarra is from Lancaster, California. And Miguel is from Lancaster, California. So
okay, well, that is confusing as heck. I was like, what do you mean is that Ibarra's first? Ibarra's been like one of their main goal scorers.
That's a different one. That was indeed the new, he joined on July 9th, in his third appearance. That was his first goal.
Mm.
Not a lot of minutes across those three appearances, 49 in total. Mm. So it's been a little bit, it must have been a little bit of work trying to integrate him into the side, but you know, he gets the game tying goal here. I also was very interested in Michael Boxall scores a goal.
Yeah, a great header.
Great header from Darwin Quintero. I love the Darwin Jr. nameplate on Quintero. It's really good. The other thing is Sebastian Leger's second goal is, again, in terms of these confounding... It does this weird thing where it looks like it curves on the ground.
I think it does. I think it does.
I don't see that. What, I don't see that too often.
I think he puts so much spin on it that when it scuffs off the turf, it sort of actually takes even more of a turn.
Which was awesome. That was great. A great sign, a great showing from both teams. Unfortunately, the red, the second yellow ejection for Minnesota's Francisco Calvo just tossing the ball in the air was madness.
So just such a stupid play too. Like, I get him holding onto the ball after the foul to just let his players get back. He probably could have gotten away with that, but the fact that he hurls it up in the air and away from the LA Galaxy player coming to take the free kick is just like, such an unnecessary move. And right now, you know, Minnesota really can't afford to be losing players like that. It didn't matter so much in that game, but it could really come back to haunt them for the game that he's out.
That's one of the things in soccer, if you haven't encountered this kind of thing before, where it's like a lot of the plays, a lot of the sort of automatic cautions are dangerous play, or I still think that removing the shirt is nothing. And shouldn't be a foul, but that's an automatic caution. Just fucking with the referee in any form or fashion.
Yeah.
Like just giving the referee shit for no reason, like throwing the ball away or firing the ball into the goal after the whistle's been called is generally an automatic caution.
Well, and it's just such an obvious time-wasting tactic. There's clever ways of doing it that a referee really has a difficult time calling. But that is just such a... it's not even a blatant play at the ref, which I do believe it is, and that's kind of the call, but just a totally pointless delay of game that, you know, they're midfield. There's not an immediate threat. So again, like, hold on to the ball. Sure, let your defenders jog back and get back into position, but to just spike it away is like, well... You can't, at that point, you've got to give a yellow.
Luckily, they were not punished even a little bit.
No, they managed to weather that storm.
The LAFC had a little bit more of a tough time of it. Their tough time is continuing.
And it's interesting, too, to see where LAFC's issues are and the fact that they brought in yet another attacking player. Seems all the more confusing when a struggling as of late SKC. I actually feel like they probably could have gotten a little bit more out of this one. LAFC had some chances. Tim Melia came up big on a couple of plays, but again, they're just... It's very similar to the Galaxy, the second Galaxy goal, actually, is there's just nobody there. And LA Galaxy's defense is just so slow and slow to react and slow to mark that it's not surprising to see them dropping so many points at this point in the season. And unless they can figure this out and quickly, it is going to hurt them because they've got Real Salt Lake and Vancouver behind them. Real Salt Lake just a point behind and the Whitecaps 3 points behind. But if they're continuing to just drop silly points like this, they should have really been able to go and get something out of Sporting KC and instead walk away with nothing while Vancouver won, Seattle won, Minnesota got a point. So they gotta tighten things at the back if they're going to weather the storm and stay in the playoff picture because, boy, there's teams behind them that want it.
You can't let it rely on one person, and it certainly... Laurent Simon has looked frustrated. I'm trying to find out why he didn't play, but he didn't play, I would assume, because he played at midweek.
Yeah, I think that was it. And he didn't have a particularly good game, that one.
And that's like sort of... It sucks. You can't put it just on that one reason, but like, this is obviously a defense that can't miss anyone. Also, why are the rounds of the US Open Cup like once a month?
I cannot figure out the timing of it, which I think is why we sometimes don't cover it, because I'm like, this has been going on forever, it feels like. It's like a 2 year long tournament.
The final is on September 26th.
Right. And it's Houston and who?
Philadelphia.
Right.
No more LA. They lost on penalties.
Right.
Which is a really fun time for Philadelphia to be having a big high stress game, if they are to hold on to any kind of a playoff place. The other notes that I had for that, Dejan Jakovic, wrong team. This is Jakovic. For some reason, I remember him when he was playing for DC so many years ago. So they get called on this penalty. I definitely think that, like, it's kind of like driving a car, you know, like the car laws with pedestrians. Dejan Jakovic gets his head up and gets contact on the attacker who is diving for a header. Can he predict when he's trying to get his waist-high boot up that the guy is going to try and jam his head into it? No.
Yeah.
But I feel like you just have to have the responsibility on the person whose foot it is to try and not kick someone in the head.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Watching it again, I was like, is it, isn't it? But I think sort of the letter of the law, if when you're kicking a person in the face in the penalty box, then you got to give something. I think it would have been unjust if it was a red card or something like that. But it was a little rough, but I get it.
It wasn't intentional in any way, but I mean, I don't think people talk about these things as a... sort of a lapsed hockey fan. I know that the high sticking rule.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just like you should never have the stick over your shoulders. And this wasn't necessarily a high boot, but I feel like there should be intense, you know, there should be an intense responsibility on the other person. Also, this is one, I think this is the one I was thinking of where... or unless it was a different game. No, I think this was it. The first... Right. Okay, no. This is yet another one where Jerso's ball is on that first Sporting Kansas City goal is very, very pretty. And again, is just like, if you have an MLS defense running, yeah, you've got a shot.
Yeah.
If you have got them moving in... If you've got them moving in and out of their positions, you have a pretty good odds of creating a scoring chance if you put the ball on goal.
Actually, that's a really good point, and one that I hadn't, I think we've talked about before a little bit, but when, perhaps we miss in our ever-present criticism of MLS defenders, is they do really seem to struggle with tracking when they're being pulled out of position. They have trouble getting back into it and seeing the space, and so that's where teams are able to exploit them, is the defender runs to cover, and the play and the opposing team pulls that defender up, and then somebody's able to make a run in behind, but the rest of the defense isn't seeing it and getting back to cover, or the defender's too slow to get back and realize they've just been pulled out of position, and now there is a massive gap on the left or right wing, for example.
The other note I had for this game is that my non-goal of the week is this amazing play that showed up in the highlight reel where LA sends a chip to a one-touch pass from a player who's on the left side of the box that sends it to Christian Ramirez, number 12.
Yeah.
That is like this beautiful bing, bang, boom, amazing play, but Ramirez is just in, and for a team that often looks, makes attacking look easy, this is almost an instructive like play for fans to like understand how this play works and doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like often we'll see this and we'll be like, oh, wow. But it's just like, you can see Ramirez start to jump, and by the time he starts to jump, you can sort of like, especially when you're watching in slow motion, you can tell it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
That the ball is just not in the right position for him to get it. But other than the fact that there was no contact, it was a very, very pretty play.
Yeah, and that's where I think LAFC doesn't need to worry too much, is that when it happens for them, they do look very good and are able to string together some great plays. It's just, now they need to string some of those great plays together at the back.
We were talking a lot about LAFC in this. Sporting Kansas City has had some challenge, but they got three big points here on the road. What do you think this said about them?
I think it's easy when a team's done well earlier in the season that when they dip to go, oh my God, the wheels have come off. And certainly we saw in a few big games, the wheels really did come off and SKC capitulated and capitulated hard. I think that it's a great showing for them. I didn't expect that they were going to be on much of a backslide just because of how good they are as a team. The one thing I will say is that as good as he's been, and he had some crucial plays in this game as well, Aiko Parra to me still seems like they may have troubles there. He was a player that got pulled out of position quite a bit and really struggles to keep up with the forwards. Now, granted, he's having to keep up with the LAFC forwards, but that could really start to hurt them when one of your best defenders just isn't fast enough. And unfortunately, I think just beginning to show a bit of his age and wear and tear, that to me is sort of the cautionary thing. However, Opara is an incredibly smart player and was still able to make some really key tackles and do his job, but I'd expect to see him bested more than a few times for the rest of the season.
Now, one game I wasn't able to get my eyes on was Toronto losing 3-2 to New York City. Did you get to see any of that? And what was your feeling on that result?
You know what? I wasn't able to because the highlight video is not up on MLSsoccer.com. It is a video cloud error, video not found message, which is awesome. So we can't VAR that one. However, I'm not terribly surprised by the result. I'm surprised that Toronto got two goals. I didn't expect New York City FC to give up that much, but as we've talked about, Toronto's finding their form perhaps a little bit too late in the season. But Tajiri Shradi gets two goals. He's been white hot for them recently, causing all sorts of problems. David Villa returned, got his first goal in the sort of the 15 minutes. So this is going to be, I think, a game that's really going to matter as we wrap up the season. And it's beginning to look like New York City FC, well, it's not beginning to look like. They are moving ever closer to the supporter shield. They're just now 1 point behind Atlanta. And, yes, they've given up 4 goals in 2 games, and that's more than they've given up, or as many goals as they've given up all season, or at least at home. But New York City FC is just beginning more and more to me to look like the team that could go all the way in the playoffs. And teams just really struggle to figure out.
I've often said that New York City FC has been this oddity in terms of how dominant they've looked until they end up against Toronto in the playoffs. And they just haven't been able to find a way sometimes around that. This was a really powerful result in terms of reversing that narrative.
Ah, and a thing that's definitely going to hurt them, Altidore was sent off in the 11th minute.
Oops. Yeah, it's too late in the season. There's not enough games to be losing key players like that.
And I'm wondering, who does Toronto play next? Because that could really be... and also would be a reason why they lost this game and a reason why they might lose their next.
Well, Altidore would then be able to play in the Canadian Championship, right? Because we had that issue with Felipe, where Felipe got sent off, and then Felipe played in that game.
Altidore will be able to go for Wednesday, but I have to feel like if you're Greg Vanney, sure, a trophy would look good to you, but you'd rather have Altidore set for your next MLS game, and it's a completely unnecessary kick at Callens after the play stopped. They are
lucky for Toronto.
Yeah. Well, here's where it gets good news, Toronto fans. Your next game is against San Jose Earthquakes. You'll be
could
fine.
Be,
There's, you know what?
Not
it's
be a better,
it's okay to be missing Altidore for that game. I feel.
Could not be a better draw. That time.
Do we want to talk about San Jose while we're here?
The last thing I wanted to say is that after a long time of being away from the New York City side, David Villa returned. He looked really good. And somebody that people were talking about a lot when I was in New York at NYCFC was Valentin Castellanos. Mm-hmm. And so it was very good with Villa coming back to see that Castellanos still got quite a few minutes, comes in at the 67 minute, and hopefully is able to... Hopefully they're able to integrate those two players into the side.
And New York City FC has shown their side that they can bend a little bit without David Villa and some key players, but they don't fully break. And that's the reason why I think that they, to me, still look like the best team in MLS right now, is when they dip, they're not dipping that hard. They're not completely breaking. It's very obvious what an impact David Villa has for them and what an important player he is. That being said, they were able to grind out points and... do okay without him. So I think that things look pretty good for them heading into the postseason. However, a team that things are not looking good for at all, in any way, shape, or form, despite picking up some points last week, is San Jose. 2-1 for Colorado. Not a ton in this game. I believe there was a red card in this one too? Mm-hmm. I feel like there was, but I can't remember how. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Salinas gets sent off. Just another really, really silly play.
Two real disaster teams.
Two real disaster teams. However, Colorado just continues to kind of be a fun team to watch and seems like maybe they're having some fun with their soccer. Marlon Hairston. Is that his first name, Marlon? I think
so. That has the ring of truth.
Hairston has really picked up. He's a player we've talked about before with Colorado as being one of the few bright points, but not really starting the season in the best way and having some not great luck or just not quite making the right decision at times. To me, it looks like he's been pushed up the pitch a little bit, playing a little bit more as a winger rather than a fullback, but that might just be him overlapping. I'm not quite sure what the strategy is there. But he had some really tasty crosses in this game, and Just great for Boateng to get the goal in literally the last play of the game. This is where it's great to see a disaster team like Colorado step up and just pull something magic out of the air to get something out of this game.
Yeah, and I love, you know, I'm paying a lot of attention to all of these stoppage time rules. It's getting to be more and more.
Indeed, which it just goes to show again that the teams that can stay switched on for an entire 98 minutes in some cases, those are the teams that are seeing success. It's just really knowing, especially against a team like San Jose, they're liable to make mistakes. And if you're patient and you wait for the right play, you can capitalize on it. Absolutely.
Yes. I did not get a chance to see the Seattle FC Dallas game. But if you're looking, when I look at the Colorado lineup, oh, Bocci was able to start now for Dallas. They've got him plugged into that striker role.
Yep, and I think he had a couple of good chances in this one as well. Acosta gets the hat trick. He just looked absolutely electric. And you can see why DC did all they could do to get him. The play of the week for me and the player of the week, and I never thought I would say this on anything recorded ever in this game, is Wayne Rooney. I believe the ball goes back to Kleshchen, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. And
we've gravitated between Acostas. There's also two Acostas.
Yes, but it's the same Acosta that gets all three goals here.
Oh, sorry. I was talking about the.
Oh shoot! Oh yes. Man!
But we can jump to DC.
That's
because I'm very.
I knew I was getting confused somehow. Like, what am I? Yes, I'm sorry.
I was thinking of the Kellen Acosta, Dominique Bodgy,
and it was the Acosta name that cued me to just automatically go to DC.
Well, let's go there. Let's go there. It was a great game.
It was a great game. It was Luciano Acosta that got all three goals. A really clever little chip from Dom Dwyer to pull something back and get it to 2-2. Again, a stoppage time goal. But the play from Rooney was just absurd. I've never seen the dude run that fast, ever, in any league at any age. Sprints back to get a perfectly timed tackle from behind, gets up off the ground, picks up his head, runs the ball back in, puts a cross to the far left of the box from about 35 yards out, nails it perfectly to Acosta, and seals the deal. It was just absolutely incredible to watch. And it's fun to watch a player that, you know, like Rooney, that's being written off as yet another sort of retirement player, come in and not just make a great play, but work his ass off for it. And I think that's the thing that makes this so impressive, is we know Rooney can hit those kinds of balls, but we did not know that Rooney can make that kind of sprint to get back as the last defender and not just prevent a really crucial Orlando attack that could have resulted in a goal, but actually to win it back and turn it into a goal for your side.
That's the thing where I kind of looked at, you know, Rooney versus Schweinsteiger. I didn't think he'd be able to have that presence in the middle of the park, that is able to be sort of a tracking back. But it's like, that was a really pretty cross. That was it's also important to know, really well-executed physical tackle. Between that and the game where he busted his nose open, he's clearly working so hard.
I think he wants to win.
And like, this could be a good rebrand for Rooney, is like, because it's always, you know, I feel like Rooney as a genius goal scorer has really had its ups and downs, because he's, you know, or I don't know if genius goal scorer, but you know what I mean, right? Like this sort of idea of him as a red hot offensive talent has, you know, runs hot and cold sometimes. But I feel like a rebrand as this very physical leader, you know, very good for him in his career and his perception.
Yeah, and I think, you know, everybody was saying, well, what's DC's plan for him? Because he wants to play in the midfield, but is he really fast enough? And his striker days are kind of over. And what they've done is actually, for the most part, played him as a striker. But mm-hmm. I agree that they clearly had a role for him to come in and lead on the pitch. And he's been able to do that. So, absolutely fantastic to see. But let's go to the game that you actually wanted to talk about.
I do have a few more notes on that.
Sure.
It's so you mentioned, you know, the fact that we've been negative on him, and it's so tough to be on the side of sort of the hypers on this one, because you hear and you were talking about MLS and its stars. You actually had a commentator in this video say, just give it for the good of the game. Literally saying when the referee is barring it, just like, oh, we need this for the narrative.
Yeah.
And like it felt so dirty to be on the side. Like, you know, the game, it's not a highlights package, but it's like a video that just shows the whole segment start to finish.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the play to the end of the VAR. It doesn't even have Acosta's name in the title. It's got Wayne Rooney's name in the title. And like, it feels dirty to be on the side of the glorifying his role in it, but you know, he really did go for broke.
Yeah.
The other discussion point is that this game did not really look very good for David Oosted, especially his decision to be so far up the pitch on a 2-2.
Yeah, yeah. There was the own goal, which I felt like was a little bit unlucky. I think he's in the right position and just reacts a little late. He's not expecting the ball to come in from that sharp angle behind him, and so backheels it into the net. But I agree, getting so high up and, you know, to not read that as a short, quick, deftly footed player, Dom Dwyer can chip that over most goalkeepers. And of course, with the re-arrival of DC's former keeper, whose name is...
Bill Hamid.
Yeah, you got to think things don't look that good for Oosted. My sense, though, is that DC doesn't... You know, if they don't keep him, I still think that Oosted's one of those rare MLS goalkeepers that has enough MLS experience that you feel like some other team would be able to pick him up in a snap.
This is probably true. The other point I wanted to make about DC is that they really needed to have this positive moment with Acosta jumping into the stands for his hat trick. We talked a little bit when they moved into this new ground about how it was kind of a low point in these sorts of emotional moments, and emotional experiences are what gets people into the building week after week.
Yeah. I agree. And it's so nice to finally see that from this side, a team that's just limped along for the last 4 or 5 years. Well, not quite, because they won the MLS championship within that thing time frame, I think. But since doing that, really not... The DC fan has not had much to cheer about. And I agree. I love seeing that energy of getting the fans going and getting them involved in it as well.
Also, they were playing Orlando City, who we didn't mention once through the entirety of the segment.
Because they suck. Dom Dwyer's good. Right, Dom Dwyer's good.
So the other game, Seattle-Dallas.
Yes. Let's actually talk about this game this time. Mm-hmm. And this is the one that you said you did not see.
Correct. Yes, I'm very curious to track, because I think Dominic Baggi is a great future in the league, and I really have been hoping that this was a good move for him. Dallas not successful on this occasion, but Baggi did get a goal. How did things look?
Things looked okay. For me, the first goal from Chad Marshall, the header in, he's not really being tracked. Rudy's kind of behind him, and there's no defender really on him, so it's not a great goal to give up, but there's not too much you can do about it. And it was great to see Dallas rally and not let this game get completely away from them. And yes, Dominic Baggi just got his first goal as a Dallas FC man. Seattle's just still, again, switched on at the right time and is beginning to crank out result after result. Their speed is definitely back, and Lodeiro seems to have found form again. He got the winning goal in the 63rd minute. It's so funny that, you know, Toronto's having the season that Seattle had last season, and Seattle's also having the season Seattle had last season, of this late season run where, again, just the whole team kind of gets behind it and is able to get a really, really important result. For Dallas, they did look better, but I just really have trouble feeling like there's much left in their season. Just kind of running out of ideas. And then you look at players like Arruda and you just go like, when was the last time he scored a goal?
Yeah.
You just can't be carrying that many players that are not contributing to the team in the way they need to.
I'm not here to say too many bad things about Maxi Arruda, but I think that he's definitely switched off. And if they're, you know, especially because they have Baji in a sole striker role, they've got with Rudy behind him. I think in like a 4-2-3-1, they really have got to maybe reset in the off season to decide where all these pieces fit.
I agree, and we've said this about Dallas before, but it bears repeating: is that a lot of the pieces are there. It's just how they're configured, and you know, maybe getting one or two other key pieces, but. You know, we just talked about Hedges last year as being our sort of star center back, but it really does feel like, similar to Simon, everything is being asked of him. And I'm just wondering what it takes to organize that back line. I think Jesse Gonzalez has shown really brilliant moments as a keeper, but I actually think that's one of the pieces that Dallas, like Orlando, really needs to address in the offseason, is to pick up a goalkeeper who's going to keep you in the game. Because it just looks at times a little bit too easy. Jesse Gonzalez is a very quick goalkeeper. He's not the biggest physical presence in the world, though. I don't know. Maybe David Ostead is a candidate there. But to me, that's still one of the weak points for Dallas. But in terms of playing as a unit, playing as a team with a bit of chemistry, that seems to be possibly on the upswing.
That would be good. It would be very good to see. I thought for a second the Seattle has this thing where they said, how many points tonight? We'll let Alonso take it from here. And he's just got two thumbs up. And I'm like, it's not how many points it is. But if you click on it, it's a video. And then he does make a 3-point sign. Okay. So I was gonna dunk on him, but I'm wrong. In fact, it's me that's wrong.
It happens.
The RSL Montreal 1-1 draw.
I missed this one. What happened?
Evan Bush went into the forest and killed a point and brought it back for dinner. That's what happened.
Okay. Tell me more. I like a good Evan Bush story.
Yeah. It's like, so early we have Plata. There's a handball penalty for RSL to score. On the 26th minute to go up 1-1. Evan Bush cannot save it. So this is the one we've said a lot. I've said a lot this season that, you know, Evan Bush often keeps Montreal in games when they're, even if he's conceded once before.
Mm-hmm.
But despite the fact that RSL had, and let's look at the shots here. It was like Montreal had outshot. Oh wait, no, Montreal outshot them. There were a number of key great chances for RSL that I don't think that there were some really impressive saves by Bush. And where I sort of say that it's Bush's deal is that, like, there really is only one. I guess they had 13 shots. I was going to say that from the video that I saw that it didn't seem like Montreal had a lot going forward, but it's hard to not have a lot going forward when you only have 13 shots. But the one goal that they did get was this, and we, you know, we keep talking about MLS defenses. It's setting balls into the goal, but Juka Raitala sends a ball in, and the RSL defender is just looking at it.
Mm.
He's just standing there. I think the ball comes to him at the top of the box, and he's just standing there looking at it as it comes in.
I'm trying to watch it, but I have to watch the ad every single video.
Our soccer.
Ow, soccer. Oof. Oh, you gotta step up to that.
Like, and I don't know, like, maybe it reflects poorly in slow motion where the idea that the cross is coming in so fast, but it looks like...
No.
It just looks like a like ball watching.
Yeah, there's like just standing there watching, like, oh, he's gonna take that hit. Oh, he took it. Well, that's a good goal. Hey, buddy, buddy, you're in the game, man. You gotta play. You're not watching this on TV. Oh, jeez.
I don't even think he turned. It's like right. So this is the deal: is that there, Montreal had 13 shots, but only 4 shots on target. Whereas RSL had 9, but 6 on. So it's like this weird deal where Montreal had 13 shots, but Evan Bush had more saves than Nick Raimondo.
Yeah, it sort of sounds a bit like a game between goalkeepers, too, that both had a number of things to do and probably a fair result for those two guys anyway.
Maybe I'm being too harsh on Montreal because I just saw a few more tremendous Bush saves in the package than I saw of RSL once, but definitely both sides have a lot to thank for the man between the posts.
Well, and I think funnily, I think it puts both teams, although in different conferences, kind of in similar positions where their keepers are earning them points and keeping them in it. And as we've seen, that's also a difference maker come playoff time. And for both teams making a late run, this bodes well for both.
Quincy Ameriqua makes his Montreal debut.
Oh, yeah, he's a Montreal guy now.
For 23 minutes, got 2 shots.
That's not nothing.
Mm-hmm. What do we have? Do we have any?
Oh, we're missing one. Columbus versus Houston.
Yes. I was not able to catch this one.
Well, when I tell you the result and I tell you how it happened, you're not going to feel too bad about that. In the 91st minute, Gyasi Zardes gets a goal. An important goal. Columbus picks up 3 points over Dynamo. I think these
stoppage time goals.
Yeah. I think kind of unlucky for Houston. You know, after their semifinal triumph on Wednesday. Was it Wednesday? Must have been. That sort of bolstered them.
Yeah.
There just really wasn't all that much in this one. But, and there was some controversy about the goal that, how did it happen? Oh, I think they were arguing that it was offside, but, Zardes makes no mistake about it and plays to the whistle, gets it in, and I do believe it was VAR'd, and they decided that it was a goal. So it's looking good for Columbus. You know, they've shaken a little bit. They're still in it. They're picking up crucial points. I mean, you'd expect that they would have beaten Houston Dynamo, but it's nice to see them really be able to weather the storm a bit, because Houston has the speed and certainly has opportunities in a game. It also means that this puts Columbus 9 points clear of Philadelphia to keep them in fourth place.
I think that that's so crucial because they've gone through a span where I don't necessarily think that they have been head and shoulders better than the Union or the Impact. But they have benefited from their early run of form. And if they're now returning to form, it doesn't really look like that has punished them any.
No, and it's interesting at how close the East was last year, and we're starting to see it kind of open up a little bit more, as we've seen in previous years, where there's significant gaps between teams, whereas the West still remains anybody's game. And although it's not good news for Houston, 33 points puts them on pace with Vancouver, who's sitting just below the playoff line. So right now I'd say for Houston, for Minnesota, for Seattle, for Vancouver, for RSL, every game matters. Every game that you can get 3 points out of and just put a little bit more distance between the guys chasing you from behind makes all the difference.
MLSsoccer.com might be out of date, but I'm under the impression that Houston actually has 27, which is pretty bad.
Yes, that's up to date.
Yes, you had said 33.
Oh, sorry, I meant with two wins.
With two wins. Oh, I see. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Would put them in playoff contention. And just to go back a second to DC, people are kind of like, okay, what does it really mean? They only have 21 points. They're still bottom of the East. But, of course, they still have 3, 4, 5 games in hand to a lot of teams. And this is where the Toronto loss could come back to haunt them. 21 points, but you figure with their form, 9 points puts them at 30, which ties them with Impact. Now, obviously, those teams still have games to play as well. But with games in hand, that's tremendous news for DC United and could spell real trouble for Montreal, New England especially, if they're not able to grind out some more results and hang on and find some consistency. I'd say similar to Philadelphia, although they've been in form, if they can't hang on, you've got to see the only team out of the teams below the playoff line in the East that I feel like could potentially squeak in for that last spot is DC United. The Orlando, the Toronto, the Chicago, it's not looking too good.
It's an interesting proposition. I think that the where you really got to look at it with DC is regardless of whether or not they are able to capitalize on that bonus, the thing you've got to look at is just, okay, so we see a lot in MLS, not all, but many marquee midseason signings take a year to heat up. You know, if you're joining in July, it doesn't always mean the best. And you know, we've seen people that you think are going to be dominant have a banana peel. I think that Wayne Rooney is tracking to expectations. I think that the real benefit, regardless of whether or not they make the playoffs, is creating positive energy around the team that allows them to enter next year with the mentality of being contenders.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. If they don't make it in, I don't think there's going to be many fans that are going to be, they'll be disappointed, but they're not going to think, oh man, the team really beefed it and what could have been. It will only build momentum, and now you've got this core of a team that looks really solid that's also going to attract other better players in. So, you know, good things are going on at DC, and a team that was much disparaged last year and at the beginning of this year, all of a sudden you're looking at it and you go, erase the first 4 or 5 months of the season and you have one of the most promising sides in MLS. Maybe not the best, but certainly one showing potential for what it could do. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's all the games.
That's all the games. Who was your team of the week?
Oh, goodness me. Who was my team of the week? I kind of feel like it's got to be DC.
That was a big result. Because DC is as exciting as it was for DC to get that result, they are not contenders, so I got to weigh in with New York City.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be my backup. Again, just bending but not breaking it. Bendicking but not breaking it.
Not that you can't be the team of the week and not be a contender, but it's not as, it won't, perhaps won't be as consequential near the end of the year. Funny you talk about Bendick, because I was just looking at the table and I see that Orlando has 23 points and a goal difference of minus 20, mm-hmm. which is 6 worse than anyone else.
Yeah.
What a year this is and a league this is where you can have a minus 20 goal difference and be 8th out of 11.
Well, look at the Whitecaps goal difference.
Minus 9. Point taken.
But I mean, also like the goals against. I believe it's 47.
Oof. Yeah, so it's one off the worst of the conference, and one off, which would be Minnesota. And well, there's two teams in the East,
mm-hmm.
Orlando and Chicago, that also have shipped that many. But yeah, I guess, huh?
Good defenses matter, but sometimes they don't matter completely.
I guess it is worth noting that all four of those teams are below the line, so it's not like you can entirely ignore
yeah.
it, but...
It still matters. It sure, for sure still matters.
Week.
Okay, so where can we find you online?
I was going to ask you your goal of the week.
Oh, goal of the week. I already said it. It was the first goal in that game with that team. I want to say Miller. Was that the center back?
Yes. The free one.
But what team was it?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, right. Thank you. Goodness me. Must be the end of the show.
I'm going to go with Jerso from Sporting Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com, and you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com and wherever podcasts are found. Please rate and review our lovely show.
And subscribe.
And subscribe.
Cool. You can find me on Twitter at thatsomls, trolling the Portland Timbers account, live in game time as well. And until next time, don't throw the ball away like you're taking a free throw just to kill time, because you will get sent off, and that's not what we want.
Noted.